out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly. For your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host. No, not Ashton Kutcher. It's Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, Dundee's co-host.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Give me that dog. It's not your dog. Yeah. Again. Oh, okay. Give me that damn dog, thief.
Annie Shelto.
You feel that?
Don't ever do it again. You feel that energy?
That's it. Oh, that's one of the better bleep moments in the show. There's another one. Every week we get together to talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we are talking about D'Angelo Vickers. And the D'Angelo Vickers arc, I would say this is, we've kind of determined this is just a 4-episode arc here from Training Day, Season 7, Episode 19, to the Inner Circle, Season 7, Episode 22. So
yeah, we zeroed in on this moment or this time in the show, and I don't know that D'Angelo himself gives us that much to profile as a character, mm-hmm. but these 4 episodes are incredibly important. They're kind of a joint or a segue or a bridge within the show between eras.
For sure. It's weird. It's a weird little 4 episodes because you have this, the emotional weight of Michael leaving the show, and then you're bringing in an A-list comedian who's just going insane all 4 episodes. Yes. Is just doing crazy stuff.
It kind of eases the pain of losing Steve Carell a little bit, I think.
I was talking to my partner about this, but I think you guys have seen Armageddon.
No. A long time ago, but
no,
sure,
okay,
yeah.
Well,
but a very long time ago. But
there's
yeah.
a scene in that where they're showing these oil drillers that have turned into astronauts in 10 days. They're showing the scene of how they're going to get to the asteroid, and they're like, "We're going to leave Earth's atmosphere, and then we're going to hit the moon, and we're going to slingshot around the moon and use the gravity generated from that to propel us out into space to the asteroid." Right? Basic science.
Yeah, that's
right?
Science. Yeah.
So
yeah.
My thought,
I'm no astrophysicist, but yeah, it checks out.
That was my analogy for what D'Angelo is that slingshot of gravity to sort of get them the trajectory they need to get into outer space and figure out where they're going. And that's kind of, that's what D'Angelo's doing. He's just an extra jet engine to like, hey, well, Michael's leaving. This is going to suck. But if we get Will Ferrell, maybe they won't notice.
Yeah.
So that's my thought. Armageddon fans, you're welcome.
I agree. Well, after we discuss the D'Angelo Vickers arc, we've got a little conference room later, followed by some trivia. I apologize for the sound quality on my end today. I'm recording in my phone because we're in Portland, Oregon, and we've got a lot of smoke out here. So we've moved out of our apartment for a second, staying with the in-laws.
Not only is it just smoke, we have the worst air quality in the world by a long, long shot.
Yeah, all
it's
along
crazy
the West
out here,
Coast
guys.
Right
yeah,
now. Yeah. So, love to all our people on the West Coast and anyone out there fighting fires. Maybe I know there's a lot of people volunteering, so mm-hmm. thank you guys so much. But anyways, let's dive into our D'Angelo Vickers. Let's escape for a moment.
The air outside will kill us. The air inside will kill us. Our breath will kill us. Yeah. But let's talk about The Office.
Let's talk about
Fuck
TV.
It.
D'Angelo Vickers, played by Will Ferrell. So this, you know, this episode Training Day episode aired in 2011. So this is like, I mean, everybody knows who Will Ferrell is at this point. I mean, he performed alongside Steve Carell in 2004 in Anchorman. Of course, you know, of SNL fame and all that, if you didn't know that any of that. But I mean, this is like, he is just a huge star at this point. So in case anyone, you know, doesn't understand the timeline of when this episode is happening, he was a big, big get for The Office, even just the four episodes. Because I think it takes about, you know, it takes about 5 days to record, to film an episode. So he was on the show for about a month. Which is a good amount of time for a guest appearance.
I'm trying to think. I don't think there's any other guest stars that are... I mean, Kathy Bates is probably next in terms of just general cachet of fame and power that
right.
as far as a guest star.
Yeah.
But Will Ferrell is like on a whole other level for the show, to the point that it's huge. A little jarring at first. It's like, whoa, Will Ferrell in this show. It doesn't quite feel like The Office now. Feels mm-hmm. like a Will Ferrell movie.
I feel like you would tune in for Will Ferrell in a way that you wouldn't tune in for any of the guest stars that they had mm-hmm. at any other point in the series. Even Kathy Bates is a big star as well, but you wouldn't necessarily tune in to see Kathy Bates on The Office in the way that you would Will Ferrell, where it's a combination of one of the biggest comedy stars in the world with one of the biggest sitcoms in the world. He brings a very unique energy to The Office, and it's very, very different these four episodes.
I guess very they got true. Jim Carrey for one scene, Warren Buffett.
Well, they're right, yeah, Jim Carrey comes in, Ray Romano, Warren Buffett, yeah. Will Arnett. Those guys all come in during, and James Spader, I guess. James Spader is also
sure.
maybe on that level. But yeah. in terms of a big comedy star and somebody you would tune in to see as a guest star, I think Will Ferrell kind of sits alone.
James Spader's on the blacklist. He's blacklisted.
He wears a hat.
It's a good point that as far as how long Will Ferrell, it's like, wow, I guess he was on set for a month. Yeah, that's a long time.
A
sizable
that's a good,
project that they got
that's
him
a good
for.
Chunk. That's a good chunk. So they got to hang out a lot with Will Ferrell, the cast. And that's pretty cool.
The other thing was, at the time, while we were watching this live, or at least every week, like it was announced, like, we knew going into the season that, like, Will Ferrell's coming for, like, 4 or 5 episodes. Like, do you remember yeah. that? I feel like we all knew that it was a limited run, and he wasn't there. They were very clear to be like, Will Ferrell is not the new manager. He's just going to be in for a guest run.
Well, I remember that they kind of announced them all at once. So it was like, I thought that there was, like, a list of just, like, all these people, and it was, like, you know, Will Ferrell and Jim Carrey and Ray Romano were on there too. So mm-hmm. I remember being surprised at how much Will Ferrell was in there, but and then disappointed with how little Jim Carrey was.
I absolutely remember that. I remember yeah. reading on Twitter the announcements that there were going to be guest stars and that Will Ferrell was going to be named D'Angelo Jeremetrius Vickers.
Yeah.
And as a viewer, yeah. not really knowing what to do with that, what is that actually going to be? Yeah. And getting these names of characters and these different celebs who were going to be starring on the show at the end of the season. We knew that Steve Carell was going to leave the show. But I think one thing that kind of underscored these episodes as a viewer when they first aired on TV was that there was a real unpredictability about them, which is where we didn't know where the show was going. And I remember, too, this isn't necessarily a part of this arc, but in between seasons, so between season 7 concluding and season 8 beginning, I would discuss with friends about who we thought the manager was going to be. Mm. There was a lot of uncertainty around the show at that time. Mm-hmm. Not uncertainty about whether or not it would come back or anything like that, but just where it was going.
Most definitely, yeah. And I mean, we'll talk about this later too, whether or not we think that they could have kept going with Will Ferrell, if that was ever even an option. I'm sure it wasn't. But yeah, anyway, a little about D'Angelo Jeremetrius Vickers. He has 4 children, one being a son. He loves the American Southwest. He's a terrible salesman, a survivor of obesity. And he was hired by Jo Bennett after he rescued her dog on the street. We should start at the beginning. We should start at training day with this incredible
the pilot, season 1, episode 1.
Yeah. And we should start with training day, this incredible, incredible cold open where we meet D'Angelo. We've got Michael Scott waiting at the hotel bar. He orders a Kahlua sombrero, which is a good piece of trivia for y'all out there.
It's come up a couple times on our show.
It's come up enough that it's no longer good trivia for us.
Yeah. Well, it's just a bad piece of trivia for
it's
you
just
then,
bad
okay?
trivia right now.
There's just so many incredible parts in this opening that I just like rewatching it again. I'm just like, I can't help but laugh. Everybody I know who skis is dead.
That's just one of the best lines. That whole conversation they have at the bar, it's great because like they don't know that he's the replacement yet, so they get some time to just sort of have some banter. Where they're just kind of businessmen crossing paths in the night at a hotel. And they're not trying to size each other up or anything. They're just sort of getting along and saying kind of weird things and both agreeing with each other, even though they're wrong about almost everything they yeah. say.
Oh, Sunshine Colorado, State. Yeah. Sunshine State, which is Florida.
That's yeah, not true. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I tried to
tell my fiance I'm drinking on a Wednesday. I won't. I don't know her.
You know, I tried to get an animal Olympics going once. Oh, yeah? What happened? Oh. Yeah. Life happened.
That's one of the best lines. That's one of my favorite D'Angelo lines.
And then, of course, that whole cold open ends with them back in the conference room, you know, basically
running around,
playing like little kids. Yeah. We should write a movie or something. I'm serious.
That just happened. She'll do.
That just happened.
Oh, she'll do. She'll do just fine.
I do love following that when the character, he tells everybody about that and all of them kind of have this reaction where they, didn't you feel kind of dumb that you didn't notice?
Yeah, that story makes you sound stupid.
You didn't figure it out yet. That's the gist of all of their reactions.
Well, I love that scene because that kind of touches on one of the themes of this Training Day episode of like, Michael versus D'Angelo, and then slowly, you know, the ensemble versus D'Angelo and how they take to him. In this first Training Day episode, what we get is I think that the rest of the employees are kind of fooled by D'Angelo in this first episode.
Yeah, well, they haven't really had any moments with him. Like they do once Michael's actually gone, and we'll get to it later. But early on, yeah, everyone just wants to make a good impression. And we see this has happened several times already by this point in the show, that a new boss of some form has come in, and everyone's trying to make a good impression. And it rubs Michael the wrong way, which is, I think, another great reason to have Michael and D'Angelo just have them getting along, just the two of them, so well, and just clicking. By then, their friendship, even however short and shallow it is tested just a little bit by their employees.
We see so much growth from Michael in season 7 to the point where he's actually able to leave the office. But at the very end, we'd still see him trying to grapple with the fact that there'll be somebody else in charge when he leaves, that he really struggles to see that they won't just do everything exactly the way that he did it when he leaves.
Yeah.
And Jim even says to him at some point, you know, we got to do this. He's our new boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is pretty funny to see that, and it does inflect a little bit of tension in these last couple episodes.
Yeah,
it does.
See between them. It's, yeah, and
yeah.
It's kind of an echo of the Ed Truck dying. You know, it's a ripple from that still of like, is anyone going to care when I'm gone? Because it doesn't seem like anyone's going to care, and that's what he's fighting this whole time. And then it's like, oh man, there's this guy that he likes, who's taking over, and everyone's already listening to him instead. And he's just like, give me my last few days, like. Give me some respect. Put some respect on my name, right? That's what he's trying to do these last few episodes. Yeah.
Next thing you know, he's handing Aaron a can of shaving cream saying, shave me.
Oh, maybe the most viscerally upsetting scene in all of The Office is watching Aaron shave Steve Carell.
Okay.
Just dry.
Your lips. Don't just shave my lips.
Just dry razor on dry skin. And just right over the and cream getting on the suit. It's just nasty. It's really upsetting.
But there's very funny blooper where Ellie Kemper kind of sprays up towards the base of his eye with the shaving cream, and they have to stop it. Yeah.
Oh gosh, that's great. Oh man. Then we get D'Angelo running out of the conference room, trying to make amends, and we get that fantastic hug between the two.
Oh my God.
Why'd you have to be so good?
The backwards, the way Will Ferrell is gripping Michael and puts when he accepts the hug and then hugs him backwards. And like Steve Carell's face is just buried in his back, like right there. And they have a really heart to heart conversation. And it's like, those guys are just back doing Anchorman. They're just having fun together again.
I know. They're old buddies. You can tell.
There is a physicality too to D'Angelo that is different from Michael Scott, and that D'Angelo is just so much, Will Ferrell is just so much taller than Steve Carell, mm-hmm. that really plays up their hug. It does. You really get to see how different their heights are.
And the way, I don't know, the way Michael goes into the hug, where he's hurt at first, doesn't accept it, and then just dives into him as soon as he leaves. Michael's just like, there's a lot of moments in this arc where Michael's playing out things he's seen in movies, and this is one of them.
Yeah, this is like the end of a great bromance.
This is a movie moment that Michael's trying to create.
They really should write a movie together.
I'm serious. I guess Anchorman 2, they kind of, a little bit.
I'm sure. Michael's last Dundies, the next episode we get to see. In the first episode, we did see a little bit of Will Ferrell D'Angelo trying to be, you know, the confident new manager, but here he is succumbing to Michael's wishes. If he wants to have mind control over him, he should be allowed to do that. but just some fantastic improv between the two. I love, one of my favorite moments is them on the floor and Michael saying, "Say it with an accent."
I know, this is the King's Speech comes up twice in this arc.
Yeah,
tell this was an extremely popular movie.
That's right.
That people were talking about at the time, because we have this scene. Michael's not even trying to like help D'Angelo. He really just wants to play this scene out with someone, because he's like, don't with an accent. Like, why would you do that? And then in Michael's goodbye, of course, we see Pam walking in to see the King's Speech in the middle of the afternoon when she's run to do paper shredders. But it is an interesting setup, because like I said, the whole last episode was dealing with the sort of last tremors of Michael's insecurities. You know, the sort of aftershocks of Michael, like, wait, no one cares. And to D'Angelo's credit, he does show some smart leadership, or at least some interpersonal understanding, to approach Michael and say, look, this place won't be the same without you. You did such a good job. I should try and learn some stuff from you. You've been here for so long. You know, like, he does actually say, reach a hand across and say, you know what, Michael, you're right. And that's all Michael needed to hear. Just someone to acknowledge of, like, you're going to have an impact here, and I can't recreate that. And yeah, you're right. You have some ideas. And I mean, the first way that we see that is the fight over how Aaron answers the phone, when we have this very direct example of management styles, unfortunately thrust on Aaron, who's not equipped to handle that kind of pressure in the moment. And just says,
Dunder Mifflin, this is...
Oh, you're right. That is better. Yeah. And then when she does answer the phone, just says, I'm sorry, and hangs up. But once we get to Michael's last Dundies, that whole episode is like, all right, if we're going to have some stuff from Michael last, how about the Dundies? That's his favorite thing. And right away, D'Angelo is not on board. The way they have his hair messed up, because it's so early in the morning, it's a great touch. And yet another scene.
When they're giving out the nominations.
The nominations. Yeah. Yet another scene of Jim opening the door first thing in the morning at his house, which has happened a couple times in the
show.
That's right.
By this
point.
For sure.
I love that they show up at his door and his response is just, yep.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Stay in bed.
What is it? Stay in bed.
Yep.
His instinct is to say Pam's not here.
He knows how to make it. There's no fighting it.
It's just acceptance. Just give me the plaques and go away. Yep. 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 Okay. All right.
It is fun to see everyone's houses. We don't get a tour of everyone's homes like this ever again.
Your donuts make me go nuts.
Yeah. We get a shot of Toby's. Toby's got a nice little house. Really well kept. They throw eggs at it.
Before the egging.
Is this an employee of ours? And then of course, Meredith, which she steals the whole show here.
Reminds me of Katrina.
Yeah, I know. No,
Busted.
Busted. Oh, I got a Dundee. Nice. She's so excited and on board.
Sausages.
I got Vienna sausages.
Napkins.
And napkins. Do you leave your door unlocked and ajar? It really makes me love Meredith more every time I see it.
Yeah. We've talked about this, and we haven't done a Meredith episode yet, but a character who I think grows on all of us.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited.
I think
it's coming.
I think as
a marinator.
I won't speak for you guys, but as I grow older, and just certain parts of your life, you just stop caring so much about. And I feel like Meredith is like the really extreme example of someone who's just grown older and it just doesn't care what people think anymore.
And she just wants to party. She likes to party.
And you just really love your Vienna sausages, yeah, don't you?
I think as Office fans get older, people like Meredith more and more.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, I also think we got to talk about D'Angelo and Dwight as Dwight, of course, did want the manager position. So we are starting to see more in this episode his disdain for Dwight's disdain for D'Angelo. And we get, Dwight, of course, throwing the Dundee in the trash. But I do love in when D'Angelo finally stands up to Dwight a little bit later on in the inner circle. I'm pretty sure it is.
Mm-hmm. Damn it, Dwight! Enough.
Yeah.
A little about me.
That's a non-musical earworm. So, okay.
Yeah.
It's a little about me. I respond to strong leadership. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I agree. There is it shows Dwight's growth, or how much Dwight has changed over the seasons, to go from where he was in season 2 in the Dundies to season 7 in Michael's last Dundies. How little he cares about flattering the manager, and how much more concerned he is with his own career and his own trajectory and his own role within the office, and to be still stuck in that sort of supporting role. At the beginning of the episode too, Michael comes in and talks about how he needs to bring on a new co-host, and the camera touches on Dwight. D'Angelo is named the new co-host immediately. Dwight once again passed over. So there is something there to work out with Dwight that happens through the end of this season, and then is kind of explained away in season 8.
And you're right. Dwight was the consummate suck-up for the show. That is Dwight's identity. That is where...
Yeah,
his going back to the roots of Gareth Bale and Gareth Bale, Gareth Keenan, and
Gareth
and
Bale,
Gareth Bale, Gareth Keenan, and
fantastic striker.
Charlie, this is the moment. Yeah, going back to the BBC office and that character, like where it comes from. That is a suck up is what that character is about, and you're right to see him not only just not care about being liked by D'Angelo, but just wanted to be left alone. He's like, I do my job, I do it well, just leave me alone. I don't want any part of this. Is very weird for Dwight. It's very odd.
Yeah.
And it's certainly something that comes up again when like Andy's manager, but yeah, that's what this whole period is. It's like for Michael, for Dwight, even for Jim and Pam to an extent, there's this weird chemistry with Michael leaving and D'Angelo coming in when they're all tested a little bit in different ways.
Well, presumably there are Dundies that happen every year, but we only see 2 instances of them. And when they're driving back from Louis Volpe's to the office, Dwight is riding shotgun and D'Angelo has to go to the bathroom. And Dwight talks about having a co-host who doesn't have microphonophobia.
Right.
So Dwight has been up there with Michael all of these years. And at the very last second,
playing the key drops,
he names D'Angelo as his co-manager.
Yeah. And it,
or co-host, I should say.
And it is a bit of a slap in the... Mm-hmm. I mean, Dwight's got a point. It's a bit of a slap in the face. I mean, how often does Michael... has Dwight covered for Michael by just playing his recorder in front of a room full of strangers?
Right.
That's some real dedication. And he does it in this episode. And and Michael has to go give a pep talk to D'Angelo. And that's the other part of this episode. And why it was such a good move to show the Dundies again from the first part of season 2 is you get Michael in control. You get Michael giving a pep talk to someone to have fun and the show must go on. And Michael being the most like level-headed and in control person in Louis Volpe's, which wasn't quite the case in the season 2 Dundies. But it's this perfect showcase of how Michael has matured. And even in the awards that he gives to people, shows his evolution from immature jokes into something that's, not quite that.
You also get
except for the D'Angelo, Extreme Repulsiveness Award.
Well, so this is what I'm getting at is that D'Angelo is kind of a neutral person perceiving all of the Dundee stuff for the first time. Why does the manager have to give the performance of a lifetime every single year when giving out very small personal awards to the people in the office? There, he says to himself, if I think about it as running a meeting, then I'm fine. And they all say, oh, just think of it as running a meeting. And Michael is not having it. It has to be the grandest production. He has to be the greatest showman. Shout out Hugh Jackman. And he has to have it that way. And D'Angelo just underscores how strange that is, especially when he gives out the Extreme Repulsiveness Award to Toby. Oh, that's so mean.
That's so mean.
He offers that commentary, and then they have to coach him up there. Come on, man. It's his last
Toby's
time.
Already shaking his head when the camera pans to him. He's like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. I love that Aaron wins cutest redhead and Meredith just throws the trophy. Who's already, she's already
best
won,
mom?
She's already won best mom and she's pissed. And Jim's little speech is great about best dad. I don't know. Maybe being a good dad's about following your own compass. I don't know.
Yeah.
Gets off stage. Yeah.
By the way, how'd this get televised?
How'd this get televised? And then Pam.
And then when he comes off stage, Pam says, you didn't think to mention me once?
Didn't I?
Yeah.
Didn't I? That's good.
Oh, gosh.
And then Aaron, just thrusting a dagger into Gabe's heart publicly.
That's brutal.
Daryl commenting, just like, that was cold. Like, it was. Did you break up in front of everyone? Gabe has a lot of funny moments throughout this arc, too. But when he goes up, and I just love that he takes the mic and feels that he's still in the show. And he's like, obviously, I'm very mad, angry at Aaron right now. And I'm going to go now. It's like, dude, you don't have to do that.
We talked about character moments. I think this was last week's episode where in character moments that are still frustrating and where Jim is listening to Aaron talk about a relationship with Gabe and he's like, yeah, I'm going to go. Just doesn't interest me at all.
That's a
good,
character
for Jim. It's very in character for Jim to bail, but still pretty frustrating that he just pieces.
Yeah. I know, and I totally disagree with Jim. That's kind of an interesting conversation to be in on and give some advice. Yeah. It's got us some juicy relationship stuff of like, wait, you're dating someone you physically can't stand being near? That's crazy. Yeah. Like, let's talk about
you're
that.
You're hiding in your car to eat.
And Jim's like,
he's accomplished so much career-wise, height-wise.
If it's weird, because if Jim had said, like, I was really uncomfortable, but instead he says, not interested. It's like, what?
Yeah.
What? It's not the right word.
But of course, that sets us up to the moment where they come back to the office and they sing the changed version of the song from Rent, or Seasons of Love is the name of the song. And we get that last moment from all of them with Michael, something's happening,
which
is part of this arc, which is really nice.
Which famously was a surprise to Steve Carell, of course.
That's right.
Yeah, they give D'Angelo the solo. Dusting off his stepbrother's scene there at the end.
That's right. that leads us into Goodbye Michael. And in terms of D'Angelo, he sort of takes a back seat this episode. He and Andy go off on a sales pitch, and this is where we learn that I think this is where we kind of finally learn that D'Angelo is not who we think he is. Here I've got the quote here in Goodbye Michael. D'Angelo says, Andy, you know how I met Joe Bennett and started on my ladder of success? Andy, no, I don't. D'Angelo, I'm walking along out of work again, thinking to myself, I only have enough cash to buy a sandwich or get drunk.
I know. I always want to bring that up with D'Angelo to remember, like, D'Angelo is like a street drifter. Who knows where he was before this? It's, and he's got four kids. It's like, his life was a mess.
Yes,
Joe really knows how to pick them.
I know. Him and Nelly, it's so funny. I hate to take us back to the Dundies, but there was one thing I wanted to say that we didn't.
Go ahead.
A detail I noticed for the first time, which is in the opening video, the opening ceremonies where Michael's playing everyone in the office. And we got to get to the Dundies, right? that.
Oh yes,
that
of course.
Oscar appears in the video, and no one else does. But it's the real Oscar, and he has a line. And no, everyone else is like, the office is empty, and Michael's making the video with D'Angelo.
Wait.
But Oscar actually has a life. Try Jim D'Angelo. He'll be able to help. And then it pans over to, hey, man, you want to listen to some records? But it's actually Oscar. It's so funny that he's in
that.
That's
so funny. That's a good bit of trivia.
Part of me wants to analyze it, but I know there's no meaning.
I know it has no content.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've disagreed about that, right, in the past? That you think...
What'd you say?
We've disagreed of Oscar's comment there, right? Because you thought it was about what D'Angelo says about needing to look into his heart, or like about what they're talking about. And I thought Oscar is talking about the camera trick that Michael was able to do with the mirror.
Oh, yes. Well, I always thought it was why Michael felt he needed to play everyone in the office, and why he needed at the very end to look at, like, why D'Angelo needed to look in the mirror and see Michael Scott. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I mean, it just made me think of my cinema studies courses in college, and how we were told, like, any time a character is looking into a mirror is very important, you know, the mirror.
right. Sure. Yeah.
There's something happening there. There's something to analyze. So I think that's maybe more like his film theory, okay. He's putting on his film theory cap there.
There's just a little shot of Oscar watching that scene, kind of squinting his eyes. And I always thought Oscar's can't help but be intrigued by the camera trick that was actually pulled off really well. Like, it's very seamless. That right. It's like, wait, there's no way Michael Scott was able to pull this off. And he wants to be like, I gotta know how he did it, but I can't. Anyway, sorry. I didn't want to, I was like, wait, I wanted to say something about Last Dundies. And that it. Okay.
No, that's the point of the show, is to just say things about episodes.
also, are we to believe that they initially had prepared to do the song from Rent at Louis Volpe's?
I guess so. Yeah, they must have been, right?
Yeah.
But Daryl didn't have his keyboard there.
Dwight had his keyboard.
So they were.
Like,
yeah, Dwight had a keyboard.
Yeah. They just had to turn the sound effects pedal off. But which is crazy, then, because that means D'Angelo agreed to do a solo in the middle of the Dundies, which is quite performative for D'Angelo too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To do that
doesn't quite add up there.
Anyway,
Well,
a great unanswered question: why was Dwight not in the room during the song?
Right.
And then
we also know
that D'Angelo is performative when it comes to juggling.
That's true.
Dwight wasn't there because he was in an all-out sprint.
He is in a
put in the car when he's
make
like
a decision.
Yeah,
here.
Like. How long do you think this will take, fellas? Because I got to make a decision here.
Goodbye, Michael. I don't know if we want to talk so much about Steve leaving the show.
We could save most of that episode because it's worthy of its own episode.
I think it was very a deft move from the show to kind of write D'Angelo into a smaller storyline that got him out of the office.
Definitely.
You know what? I'm going to get out of your hair.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That was effective because Michael could, have all of his sort of closure moments with the other characters without having to worry about the fact that D'Angelo's there or in his office or trying to come up with a new practice. It was nice to kind of get D'Angelo out to the animal shelter while Michael is shooting basketballs or shooting at the hoop over his head and trying to use the baler.
And like the D'Angelo Andy scene is also, Andy goes on to become the manager eventually, and he gets to sort of see D'Angelo work up close and personal and realize, oh my God, D'Angelo is a terrible salesman. His background story is nuts. You're telling me he was just kind of a homeless drifter and saved a dog and Joe hired him. That's it. And he has to do this sort of stealing a dog to recreate that energy that he got. It's very bizarre.
It makes you wonder about Nelly's backstory.
Oh my God!
Well,
totally.
Nelly and D'Angelo, there's a couple that might have worked. Could have worked. Joe Bennett playing matchmaker, but it is it's just a weird. The whole thing is really weird between D'Angelo and Andy, and then they actually go on the sales call. Yeah.
Well, I want to back up even a little bit just because, you know, Andy and D'Angelo already have an odd relationship at this point because Andy's office funny guy. Okay. He's got, it's back in training day when.
What do you got for me? I'm like a little bit of a midday lull here. What do you got for me?
It's because, too, they're telling the story of how they didn't like know that D'Angelo and Michael didn't recognize each other when they met at the hotel bar. And Andy pulls out, like, "Hello, my name is Andy" stickers and says, "That's why I always keep a couple of these. You never know." Which is just so absurd. Oh, gosh. But
now drink the soap.
Yeah.
Drink some soap. Drink some soap.
Drink some soap. This is my life now.
That's right. Oh, gosh. But then, of course, at the end of Goodbye, Michael, we get Michael's goodbye party, which he's not there to attend. And D'Angelo, we get D'Angelo palming the cake. And
I like the corners.
He goes back for it again. No, I deserve this. Yeah. What are you doing? Flicks it into the trash.
Dwight just turning to Jim going, "Uh-oh."
Yeah, that's the moment of like, oh boy. Oh no. Yeah. This guy's unhinged.
That's one of the funnier things about this arc is that Michael for so long has been the crazy boss or the unorthodox boss or the annoying boss or whatever adjective you want to put in front of that. And he is replaced by someone who is more unpredictable and more of a live wire. And he's slotted in to be there indefinitely. There's something very, very funny about that, that they're trading this known for the unknown. It reminds me a lot of when Jim goes to Stanford and then Andy is the new sort of Dwight equivalent up at Stanford, and Jim just doesn't really know what to do with him at first.
Yeah, and he tries to do the same old tricks, and he gets a reaction he doesn't know what to do with from Andy, and he's like, "Whoa!" And when we get like when Andy and D'Angelo are on the sales call, and D'Angelo does the whole sales pitch to that guy of like, "If you want a white bread, boring paper representative who's going to get you your paper on time at the agreed upon price, Andy Bernard is not your guy." Andy keeps thinking like, "Oh, great. My manager's going to help me." And he doesn't. Yeah. Angela's just like, just completely takes it another way and does like, you ever play Russian roulette?
Time to spin the chamber.
Time to spin the chamber, boys.
By signing up for another year. And it's like the craziest sales pitch of all time. Like, it's not when you want to hand someone
potential.
Paper.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm not going to say he's the best. He's got potential. Andy Bernard is not your guy.
You go with this guy, you could be making the biggest mistake of your life or the biggest good decision of your life. It's either going to be the best thing you ever did or the worst thing you ever did.
And then Andy goes back and gets the sale. Like Andy kind of grows up in that moment. Big things happen for Andy there, like where he gets, you know, obviously Aaron breaks up with Gabe and Andy has a little hope there. And then, of course, this whole arc where it's like Andy kind of finds his footing as a salesman a little bit and probably propels him to a spot where he can become manager. So even though D'Angelo and Andy is a bit of a side story in this Michael Goodbye, it does set up a lot of season 8.
There is something funny, too, about Michael showing trust in Andy, where he gives Phyllis the chattering teeth, and he gives Stan Lee the felt mini pool table.
I've fallen and I can't get up. Yeah. Stan Lee, you like that?
And he gives Stan Lee the felt without the balls for the mini pool table. And then to Andy, my 10 biggest clients.
Yeah. I'm going to lose them.
I guarantee you.
Michael, I lost Foster paper. I lost them.
I lost Porter Hardware.
Porter Hardware, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, buddy. You keep going.
Well, let's talk about the D'Angelo's final episode, The Inner Circle. This we learn that D'Angelo's got the Inner Circle, which is Jim, Daryl, Gabe, and Kevin. Right?
You hear that, Mom? Your boy, Kevin Malone, is in the Inner Circle.
I mean, there's a theme in this episode that I don't like. I think this is kind of like a sort of problematic episode. They identify this, what's happening, as you know, that D'Angelo is a bit of a sexist. He you know, he just tries to hang out with the guys in the office and sort of ignores the women. And sort of just as they're kind of breaching this subject, basically D'Angelo does his free throw line dunk and goes completely brain dead, and they just move on from it. I thought it was what I did like about this, though, is it almost is reminiscent of some of those early episodes for The Office, like, you know, Diversity Day or sexual harassment or, you know, stuff like that. And I think that what I really like about this episode is, you know, we get Steve Carell is gone and we see just Will Ferrell as the manager for an episode.
And he just immediately makes the office into a boys' club.
Yes.
There is an element of everything that we've come to know about the office over all this time, and it's suddenly all in flux. It's similar to when Charles comes in. Basically, I'm thinking of Kelly and Ryan and how Ryan basically pretends that he's Kelly's boss to kind of justify the fact that he has a job. And Jim all of a sudden isn't beloved by the boss when he mentions that his actions might be coming across as sexist. There's and that Dwight isn't best friends with the boss or doesn't have a great relationship with the manager either. And that's of Dwight's own choice, of course. But
and he hires pretty much a supermodel with no experience to have an office
right.
job.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, there's so much of it just gets kind of ripped out from under us as viewers. We've been watching for so long and these dynamics are so established. It's funny to watch D'Angelo come in. And then even when Kelly says, no, D'Angelo, Ryan is not my boss. He hasn't worked here in years. And then D'Angelo just says, well, you seem kind of hysterical to me.
Yeah,
I like things the way they were.
That seem a little hysterical. Yeah.
Yeah.
So terrible.
Yeah,
so,
it's hard to watch. Yeah.
You know, it's...
And let's be clear, the point is that D'Angelo's being horrible.
Of course.
It's not
of
like,
course,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Of course, but and I guess, you know, he gets his by you know, becoming completely brain dead. Later, so like later in the show, I think Daryl mentions like that D'Angelo died and Andy says something like, no, his brain died.
Yeah. All of the reason that I mentioned those is just examples of how jarring it is to think that D'Angelo might be the boss long term, or what that might seem like or feel like as a viewer when for so long we've seen Jim and Dwight is kind of right below the manager and Ryan Kelly's dynamic perceived in a certain way. And
but they're also getting an opportunity, but I mean, it's like, they're also getting a chance here to laugh at him too. I mean, it's like if he hadn't, you know, nearly killed himself doing the dunk, you know, I guess he did in a way actually do the dunk, didn't he? But they're certainly laughing at him when he does his miming, juggling routine. I think, like, you know, quickly they would have figured out that he's, you know, he's just as much of a moron as Michael Scott ever was, and he wouldn't have much power over them anymore.
At the beginning of the episode, he's delivering good news in a very severe tone.
Yeah, that's right.
Daryl, company's sending you a business school at night. Deal with
full
it,
ride.
Pal.
Deal with it. Seriously?
Yeah.
Change two. Toby, you're getting a new chair. Thanks. Don't thank me. Hey, don't thank me, guy. I don't care if you like it.
That's the new thing on Ice Cream Fridays.
Yeah. Here's some ice cream. Yeah.
And
that's right.
And he says, this is the time where I need to figure out who's a good worker and who's going to tell me what I want to hear. Because pretty soon I won't care and I don't know the difference.
Yeah, that's right. Kevin's got me pegged.
That is astute observation, Kevin. That's he draws a lot of lines early on. We get it before this episode actually, where he's just like not impressed by Jim and Pam's baby, which is just a great. We always like it when people just don't buy Jim and Pam's charm. It's always funny. And it keeps writing here when, you know, Pam tries to like get her friend hired and he's just like, put it with the others. He's just robotic with her. And then, of course, they're going through all the resumes for that job that he eventually hires Jordan Garfield for. And that's mm-hmm. when we find out D'Angelo is a motivational juggler, which he's not. I think he's just insane. I don't think he does a motivational juggling routine.
No.
At all.
Of course.
Which is such a weird...
Phyllis, do you trust me?
It's such a weird flex, though, to be like... To call out the guy, like Daryl, who's like, oh, it's funny, this guy put juggling under special skills. And D'Angelo just like, what's funny about juggling? You know, it's a weird thing.
And I mean, I'm sure we've all seen this. I think somebody sent this to us at one point, but someone created a video where mm-hmm. they added in the juggling balls.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right. That is really impressive.
That song that's playing while he does it,
Evanescence
yeah. is such a great call. I feel like it's like, I swear I saw a juggling routine in elementary school, and that the music was definitely like that for sure.
It's so
save
intense.
Me.
Save me from the nothing I become.
He moves the ball off the back of his neck at the end where he caught it. It's such a great, such a great detail.
I do love when Gabe calls it Magic Jordan.
Yeah.
It's Michael Jordan. And you talked about the dunk. He doesn't really do the dunk. It seems as if he jumps and grabs the rim and pulls himself up by the rim to do the dunk.
Right.
He jumps off Kevin.
Well, he jumps over Kevin.
Oh, I thought he kind of planted off Kevin's back so that he could get to the rim.
Oh, it might have been. They cut it together so quickly that we're not supposed to see much. And then they smash cut to the ambulance driving away.
Yep.
Yeah. Now what?
I love, too, when he comes back in the hospital gown and Aaron just says, Michael, when he walks in. Azgu. Yeah.
We have a mutual friend and... Back in the day, if he drank too much, that's exactly what he sounded like when he talked, was D'Angelo when he comes back from the hospital.
Asgo, asfu. Fuzizal, asazgu. Asbudai, asbudai.
Clear nonsense.
Bartender says to pow.
Perfectly normal cadence, but gibberish words.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Good stuff. What, any favorite D'Angelo moments that we didn't get a chance to touch on?
I have one. This is my favorite D'Angelo quote. And it's when Dwight he's trying to get on Dwight's good side. It's from the Inner Circle. And, Dwight says, it's just that so D'Angelo says, there he is, got your coffee. And Dwight says, oh, wow. Thank you. That was so kind of you. And he throws the coffee in the garbage. D'Angelo says, not a coffee guy. I take it. Dwight says, it's just that I own the coffee shop. So once you've seen sausage being made, all you want to do is make sausage because it's so much fun. And D'Angelo says, listen, I got a sixer, automatic for the people on the jukebox. Let's hit the park after sundown. Come on, pick up some sausage if you want. And Dwight says, I think you'll find what you're looking for over there. And he points at Oscar. Automatic for the people on the jukebox. Good.
I think you'll find what you're looking for over there.
Automatic for the people. This is a perfect specific reference.
I think my favorite D'Angelo quote is either the Animal Olympics or his whole sales pitch when he's with Andy, because it's so weird. But the when he's shooting the basketball and he finally makes one, he just goes, see what I did there? That's what you gotta do. And he goes, put a little English on there. The British are coming.
English on the ball.
And he says, the British are coming. It's such a funny little, like, it's such a weird thing to say. I don't know why. It just tickles
there
me.
There are so many Will Ferrell, like Will Ferrell, it seems as if his move is to take everything to a crazy place. He escalates so many situations.
And commit.
And commits to it
100%. All the way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's an energy that we don't get in the office very often.
No.
I love when he invites his barber in to shave him in the office, and I think we're maybe supposed to think he's maybe kind of a normal guy at this point, but he's just talking to his barber and he goes, I saw a hawk today. just sitting right there on the overpass looking at me.
I saw a hawk today.
Just looking at me.
That's
so
amazing.
Oh, God.
That's fun, too, when we get Ryan's reactions to D'Angelo initially or so. Ryan, BJ Novak does this thing when his character is around people that the character really respects or looks up to. He gets very physically fidgety. I've noticed. And he does it a lot with D'Angelo when he's watching him shave. Oh, okay. He kind of gets uneasy that he needs to, like, he gets really self-conscious. It's just a funny thing that Ryan's character does. Really like it.
That's good. Oh, I've never noticed that.
But don't, like, boss me around.
Yeah.
Lead me when I'm in the mood to be led.
Yeah. He does it after Michael, the power move, and Michael's not caring what people think. He's like, I don't know how you do it, man. I just don't know how you do it.
Yeah. You'll learn, baby. You'll learn.
Well, here's the big question for you. Would you have liked to have seen an entire season of D'Angelo as manager? Do you think it could be done? Yes or no?
It could be done in the way that, like, I could sit down and, like, eat a 2-pound steak. It's just.
Hey, you get it for free if you did.
It's going to be way too rich. I'm going to be way too full, and I'm not going to feel great afterwards. And to me, that's like Will Ferrell. There's a reason that when he's a lead in a movie, it's a movie. I could take about an hour and a half of Will Ferrell on 10, set to 10. And I just don't know how much longer it could have lasted. Sure, it could have happened.
Yeah.
But put him in, say, Robert California's role. I don't think you could sustain that for a whole season versus someone like Robert California. His character is much more of a slow burn. And D'Angelo is a hot fire burning. It's not gradual.
I think we got the perfect amount. I think if we had a full season, that would be a bit too much for a lot of the reasons that we talked about. For Will Ferrell's sort of high energy play within a very mundane setting, I think even James Spader, his lines are they're delivered very calmly versus D'Angelo, his lines are very over the top and high energy and very loud. And I think, too, the other thing is all the dynamics we talked about, Ryan and Kelly, that would have been hard to watch for a whole season. With Kelly kind of having to pretend that Ryan is her manager and D'Angelo making the office into a boys club. Those dynamics would have been hard to watch for a whole season. I think with one episode and then he breaks his brain, that's the right dosage, I think. It would have been very difficult unless they made some big changes to the way the office felt. Or they would have had to make it feel like the normal office plus D'Angelo versus the version of the office that we saw when D'Angelo was the manager.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that you know, to imagine it, you only really have to look to Nelly and what they had to do with her character, where it's like she came in super hot, she came in at a 10, and then they really had to back off and kind of sort of, you know, make you feel sorry for her, sort of write some heart into the character, sort of make them sympathetic and normal. So they could have done that eventually with D'Angelo. We could have, you know, we could have injected some heart into the character. But then at that point, why? Is that really what you want? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I would trust the writers and producers to figure it out eventually. Mm-hmm. But I was just in Andy Green's book, in the sort of another oral history of The Office that's not the podcast. Mm-hmm. Will Ferrell's talks about this, that he was at a meeting with his agents and his manager, and they were going through projects, and he was like, oh, he says, hey, I know it's Steve's last year. I'd love to go on and just do a cameo. And they were like, oh, would you want to just do a character arc? And Will Ferrell was like, yeah, let's do it. So he volunteered for this position. It's not like they had to sell Will Ferrell. So, and he went in as basically doing Steve a favor or this would help. And Will Ferrell asked the producers, would this help the show? And they're like, yeah. Like, come in for as long as you want. It's like, great, we'll just do a little, we'll do a character arc. And
I also think that Will Ferrell on our show would do a lot for our show. So if he ever wants to come on
for a few episodes.
Invitation is open, man.
Yeah. Come be our
do a little character arc.
Come host our trivia for a couple months. I also wanted
Annie Shelton.
I also wanted to share this little bit, maybe as just a way to wrap up Will Ferrell's role on the show. But this is from one of the producers of the show who said, Will was just a wonderful man. we'd say, you know, Will, we need you first thing in the morning, and then we're not going to need you until the last thing in the evening. If you want to disappear for 6-7 hours, just hang out by your phone and let me call you when we need you. And he's like, heck no. Do you guys know, you guys have provided a nice trailer for me, and I saw a basketball hoop out there. You got a basketball? I said, sure. Props has a basketball. He goes, hey, I'll go shoot some hoops. So Will Ferrell would hang out for hours behind the warehouse on the set, shooting hoops with some of our crew people who weren't busy at the moment, like electricians and camera guys or grips. I used to say to them, go shoot hoops with Will. We'll call you if we need you. Now,
that's awesome.
That is my personal paradise right there.
That sounds like the greatest day of all time. You show up first thing in the morning and you are on the office for a little while, and then you shoot hoops for the rest of the day. And you come back and you shoot hoops. And you're on the office again at the end.
I know. Or imagine just,
doctor is in.
Or you're working in the props department. They're like, oh, just go shoot around with Will for an hour. You're like, oh, okay, cool. Let's do it.
I think when you're back on your feet, Alex, and we can play pick up again or get a run in again, when we shoot back off the glass, we have to say the British are coming. Next time we can get a run in.
People are going to be like, what the hell are they talking about? A little English on it. See what it did there? Flick that wrist.
Well, I'd say that just about does it for our D'Angelo story arc episode. Let's move on to a conference room. 5 minutes.
Okay, everybody, listen up. If you are not in that conference room in 2 minutes, I am going to kill you.
All right, this week's conference room is going to be pretty quick. If it comes from Adam on Facebook, thank you so much for sending these in. He asks us a very simple question. Team copier or team chair?
Remind me, everyone gets a new chair?
Everybody gets a new chair, yes.
Maybe except for Toby, because based on what D'Angelo said, he was just getting a new chair.
Don't thank me, guy.
At that point, yeah.
Don't thank me, guy. I'm going to go team chair. You got to have a comfy chair.
That's my gut, was team chair. It's going to make your employees maybe a little more productive, maybe a little healthier.
Yeah, I like Pam's logic. Everyone sits in a chair every day.
But not everyone.
But not everybody sits on a copier every day. Mm-hmm. Or even uses a copier.
I would also probably assume that the amount of paper that needs to be copied is getting less and less every year. Meanwhile, chairs remain an important part of the office.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they call it a paperless world after all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is going to be really exciting for everyone at home listening, but I'm also team chair.
All right. Yeah. That means we get new chairs at the Michael Scott Company. Go out and buy yourself a chair. It's on the company credit card.
I just bought myself a new chair.
Dude, I did too.
It is great. Ooh, la la. We got those office stickers not that long ago. Do you remember that, Alex?
Yeah, yeah.
Around December. I have a sticker of Zen Dwight or Meditating Dwight. On my right armrest.
That's a good spot.
Nice. It's addition to my new chair.
I put the little Dwight. It says, don't be an idiot, with a stern Dwight. And I put that on my little microphone USB box. So it's always in my sight when I'm working. And a good reminder.
I mean, it's hard to think of the copy. The thing about the chairs, that everyone is in the chair all day. That's a lot of time. And they can make a big difference in how people feel. The copier is probably not used every day. I'm sure it sucks, but they can figure out a different way to budget for the copier next year. But I'm team chair all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Team chair.
We have a part two of this, another thing that Adam sent us.
Okay.
Thank you again. So this is just four different options for what would you pick, or which would you pick. So number one, Dwight becoming manager instead of Andy. Get to see Michael and Holly's wedding plus their kids. Getting an episode about Creed's life, Jim never goes to Philadelphia.
Give me a Michael Holly wedding episode.
Yeah. That's a good, yeah.
I think that's my pick. I think Dwight as manager, it wouldn't work for that long of a time. It works better in short little bits that we get. Jim not going to Philly, I don't really care.
I don't really care about that one very much.
Really care too much. And what was the fourth one?
An episode about Creed's life.
I like Creed shrouded in mystery. give me Holly and Michael's wedding.
I would take a Creed episode. It would have to be completely different. As we've already discussed, it'd be more of like a Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul.
Just a whole different genre. Just
totally different genre.
I'm sure that I use this exact same example when we talk about it on another episode. But
Frank?
There's an episode of Always Sunny called Being Frank,
yeah,
where it's all POV from Frank Reynolds' perspective. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, that was my first instinct as well, was the Michael Holly wedding plus their kids, because that is kind of the great unknown with The Office. But for the sake of being different, I'll take Jim Never Goes to Philly. I think season 9 would have been maybe a little bit more fun to watch, or a little less hard to watch, let's say, if the Jim Philly thing isn't out there. That's, I don't know, point. What I would switch in its place, because you need to give Jim and Pam something to do in that last season.
Do you? I don't know. I don't know. Need to be so. Okay, we can talk about this more later, I guess. But it didn't need to be. I didn't think it needed to be like they needed to give us high stakes drama for Jim and Pam anymore. It would have.
Hey,
been,
man, we're inside and the air outside is 99% smoke. We have all the time in the world if you want to talk about it.
No, I mean, we don't have to get too deep into it, but I do. But you know, I think that they could have cooled off on Jim and Pam in general and just been like, oh, it's nice, you know, they're grounded, they're cool, we don't have to worry about them. It's just Jim messing with Dwight,
figuring out how to parent is drama enough.
Yeah,
right,
that would have been fine. That would have been all right.
You know what I would have swapped that with? Maybe is Meredith chasing after Brian the Boom Guy.
Hey, when are you going to boom me?
Yeah. Hey, all of the Jim and Pam time that we got in season 9 is very much minimized, and it's all Meredith it's and Meredith. Brian the Boom Guy.
I'd be okay with that.
And she wins him over eventually.
Yeah.
And like, they fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I would have been okay with that.
I got it really Bruce. Quick. I have a pitch. Bruce. I got a pitch. I got a pitch for a Creed episode.
Okay.
Which would be like a special episode they release later, or it's an extra or something, which is Creed steals a camera and a boom mic from the crew after work. And all they get is footage that Creed has shot around his life. So it is first person POV, much like Being Frank, but it's just Creed narrating as he takes the camera around.
Yeah.
And it'd be really weird and abstract. And the producers of the documentary would find it later and cut it together into an episode. And so
that
would be great.
Ooh, that's
episode.
Brilliant. That's really fun. That's a
pretty
really
amazing
fun
for a day in a dog food factory.
Yeah.
A dog food company.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Okay, trivia this week. I got two different trivias. From two different folks, kind of two short little trivia bits, and I thought they'd go well together. This first one comes from Alana from London. You sound like you're from London. An Office fan. We just watched Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and shout out to Paul Rudd.
Oh, that's right.
You sound like you're from London. And this is a trivia all about Michael's eating habits, specifically Michael eating.
Love it.
Okay, cool.
Let me get the bell here.
While you're getting that, just a quick moment to recognize that there is one Office President moment that we didn't catch in our trivia from a couple weeks ago, which is Andy's reference to Richard Nixon.
Oh, yes, that is.
And Pam talking about how Jim looks particularly Nixon-y in the morning, which, to be fair, I think a lot of us look kind of Nixon-y in the morning.
Yes. Nixon-y. All right, here we go. Michael's eating habits. There's 8 questions. Question 1, what is Michael's order from Wendy's over the phone?
Chili and a baked potato.
No.
Frosty
and a baked potato. There we go. I don't have I need an buzzer. I only have the bell.
Oh, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Whoa! Boy, the challengers are lining up, Edwin, by the way. To take you down.
I know. Jeez, yeah.
You're going to have to do this.
Mm-hmm. Question 2. What food does Michael order in Night Out? And then what does he order instead when the staff says they don't serve food?
He orders like mozzarella sticks or chicken fingers.
Yes, like chicken fingers, and I never caught this.
Jalapeno poppers?
The drink that he orders.
Shirley Temple? I don't
know.
It's grenadine.
It's a Midori sour.
Oh, Midori sour.
The joke that Josh and Jim make back at the convention.
Yes.
A shot of Midori, perhaps.
And I wonder, ever since that, Michael has been ordering Midori.
He looked it up and was like, oh, yeah.
And he asked a cup of martini olives and a cup of maraschino cherries.
Correct. Very good. Olives and maraschino cherries. Very nice. Question 3. What candy bar does Michael eat while working at the call center? Or it's not a candy bar, but what bar does Michael eat?
Vanilla Crisp Power Bar.
Wow.
If you focus on your sales. which gummy sweets are in Michael's sad box and which are in his happy box?
This was a trivia question that I... Bears sad, worms happy.
Come on. Nice.
Oh, my gosh.
Question five. Killing what is Michael's drink order on his blind date with Pam's landlady?
Oh, it's hot chocolate with caramel and a shot of peppermint.
Whoa! Nailed it.
Wow.
Every part of it.
Wow.
Was it small? Michael? Was it a small, medium, Michael? Or large?
Large.
Yeah!
Wow.
Michael?
Killing
it. Just doesn't
I give our lady, my lady a 10 for looks and one for an ability to describe herself.
What is Michael's favorite ice cream flavor?
Chocolate chip mint.
Yep, mint chocolate chip. We find that out in this arc.
Mint chocolate chip.
What types of sub does Michael order for everyone on his birthday?
Tomato, bologna, and ketchup.
Easy. And finally, what?
Somebody ate 3 feet of that thing.
What does Michael order to intimidate Grotti in Mafia?
The gabagool.
The gabagool.
With a side salad, yeah. If the salad comes on top, I send it back.
Yep, very
there
nice.
You go. There you go.
All right. More now. This is from Ryan. Okay. The Rye Guy, as he self-identifies here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Here we go. A few questions from the whole series. What is David Wallace's wife's name and son's name?
The son is named Teddy.
The son is named Teddy. Teddy McFredwin with the answer. That's Edwin's nickname, everybody. Teddy McFredwin.
No, it was Freddie McTedwin.
Oh, Freddie McTedwin, excuse me.
John, is my name still in your phone as Fred?
Yes it is.
No way.
Yeah, it is.
That's awesome.
It asked me one time if I wanted to update your contact. And no. I said no thank you.
Case of mistaken identity. I am buying time because I can't think of the wife's name.
No,
it's Rachel.
Okay.
Rachel.
By the way, Edwin Wallace,
my contact picture is still you in the apron that says wherever I go, there I am. Okay, question two. What is Pam's sister's name?
Penny.
Very good. This is a fun. This is a fun one.
Season four, episode one.
How many characters' middle names can you name? Ryan listed 14. Okay. So we might be able to
Angela,
get more. But
Angela Noel.
Interesting, you started with that one. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, Dwight, Kurt.
Uh huh. Two.
Does Phyllis count as Phyllis Lappin Vance?
No, that's a hyphenated last name. That is not her middle name.
Michael Gary Scott.
Michael Gary Scott. There we go.
Kelly Aaron Hannon.
Kelly Aaron Hannon. Very nice.
Pamela Morgan Beasley.
There's five.
Mm. Andrew Baines Bernard.
Yes.
Kelly Rajaganda Kapoor.
I thought Rajaganda was a girl's. It was a boy's name.
Holly Partridge Flax.
Holly Partridge Flax. Wow. Not on his list. All right, there we go.
Gabe Elizabeth Lewis.
Oh, Sean.
Gabriel Susan.
What's
Susan.
In it for GSL?
Shoot.
D'Angelo Jeremy.
Yeah,
Trius-Rickers.
There's 10.
Who else is there in the cast? Ryan Bailey Howard.
Ryan Bailey Howard. There's 11.
Wow.
We just got to beat 14.
You're going to get him.
We just got to beat 14.
Kevin. Do we know Kevin?
I'll just start naming some characters. Jim Halpert.
Oh, my God. I administered a middle name trivia.
I know.
In an episode.
Bro, I've been administering trivia for a year now, and I don't remember anything.
Shoot.
I'll give you a hint.
Let me think.
Not on Jim's name, but there's two other characters that we know their middle names, but we never, they're not really ever in the show. We just hear about them. One is Creed's real name.
William Charles Snyder.
Yes. There you go. Well, another one is a baby.
Cecilia Marie Halpert.
Yes. Very good.
Okay. And then Jim, we just need Jim's middle name?
Or just somebody else in the cast. Someone else.
James.
I don't know.
Another one is a name that Toby says during Last Undies. in this arc.
George Howard Scott.
it's a bit of a strangler.
Yeah, it's a bit of a cheap shot, but we'll take it.
Oh boy.
So there's
well,
14.
Thank you.
There's 14. So really what it is now is what is Jim's middle name?
Wow. Philip. I don't know.
No, close. It is Duncan.
Duncan. Oh, Jim Duncan. This came up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this.
Did we miss any others? We got Kurt Schrute. We got.
I'm sure we did.
Sure, we did too.
Do we get a bonus point for Dwight Fart Schrute?
Well,
Mr. Pooh.
Thank you so much for sending in trivia, Ryan. And who was the first one from again?
Alana.
Alana, thank you guys so much for sending in trivia. You can send us in your trivia at home. Email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. You can call us 503-694-9331.
Put trivia in the subject.
Yes, please. Call us 503-694-9314. You can leave us a message and we play them on the show. Last week we had a voicemail episode if you haven't listened to that yet. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company, Twitter at Michael Scott Pod. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. You can join us on patreon.com/Michael Scott and become a Scott's Tot for $5 a month. Every month, we'll do a special extra episode, mailbag episode, where we answer all the questions on Patreon. So anything that you write to us on there, we will talk about on a special Scott's Tots show. And we're donating a portion of our what we make on Patreon to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. And we'll continue to donate to different charities in the future. So please join us on there. $5 a month.
And you know what? That money's getting sizable now per month. That's
getting bigger.
That's a donation every single month. I think we're doing about half of the money is going. So this is
sweet.
This is
yeah,
a good thing
we
got going. And
we just keep the small amount of money that it takes to run this show and to occasionally go on Airbnb retreats as a team and record episodes.
Mm-hmm. Although, for context, we've done that twice, and it was before we started Patreon.
Yes.
And God knows when we're actually going to be able to do that again.
Yeah, we have. So, I mean, we've been recording.
I don't know. Who knows when that's going to happen again?
Yeah, yeah. So for now, that money's just going to a good cause. So join us on there. It helps us do the show, but it goes to a good cause too. So and special thanks to Ryan Lowe, who helps us with all our social media, designs our artwork. Special thanks to all our Scott's Tots. This episode was recorded in Portland, Oregon over video chat.
Those retreats were also, let's just say, pre-quarantine and pre-COVID.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that's true. It'll be a while again before we're doing them again. But so, yeah.
You know, I say it every week, but it really – thank you so much for listening. Like, it really does mean the world to all of us, like the three of us. That the fact that the show is still going and the fact that the show keeps growing, we get messages every now and then for people who find us within the last week or the last month or something like that, and that – I don't know. It helps people out in this time to just have something kind of to listen to while they're hanging out at home. We here in Portland are certainly trapped at home. But really and truly, it means the world to us that you guys are listening, hanging out, interacting with us. So thank you. Really, really and truly. And the fact that we're able to turn this into a platform where we're able to give to charity is absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm.
And the charity, I don't know if we mentioned too, because the charities are all going to be, you know, education opportunities for minority students, mm-hmm. college funds.
Yeah.
Things
exactly.
that Scott's Tots was actually trying to do, we can actually help with on the show. And so even
accomplish
if you're...
accomplish Michael Scott's dream.
Even if you listen to our show to fall asleep, like I know a lot of people do, we love it. Keep doing it. And if you want to join Scott's Tots, help us with our donations, love to have you.
Yeah, if you're out there, we appreciate you.
Pippity Poppy, give me the zop.
Yes, sir.
Measure your life in love.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is gonna hurt like a mother.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island, USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.